So we are going to complete chapter 13 today, the last four or five verses. And what we have covered so far in chapter 13, this chapter started with six questions from Krishna to clarify certain terms like Purusha, Prakriti, Kshetra, Kshetraknya, Jnanam, Neyam. And in answering Arjuna's questions, Krishna basically categorized Kshetra, the field, being the same as Prakriti, matter, and Kshetraknya, the knower of the field, is the same as Purusha, the consciousness. Thus, in essence, there is only two components in this whole creation. Although the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads use different terms, basically in creation there is only consciousness and matter. And this Krishna clarified in the first 23 verses of this chapter. And he concluded in verse 23 by saying, one who has knowledge on what? Knowledge on how to differentiate what is matter, what is creation. Such a person who is able to distinguish between knowledge and matter, between consciousness and matter, and claim what? You know the difference, then what should you claim? That I am the consciousness and I am not this matter. Since we say that the whole creation is composed of two components, and this body, this mind is also part and parcel of the creation, therefore it follows that what? Myself, my body, mind, consciousness also has two components. It is a mixture of two components. That is matter and consciousness. And I should use my discriminating power to understand which part of me is matter, which part of me is consciousness. So which part of me is matter? How to know which is matter? What is the definition of matter? That is, which is constantly changing. So I know my body is changing, I know my mind is changing, my intellect is changing. Everything that I can see is changing falls under matter. And which part of me is consciousness? Which part of me is consciousness? The one, the changeless one, which is observing all these changes. The one consciousness that does not change but is observing all the changes. That means I knew that I was a young boy before, I knew I was a teenager before, I know that I'm an old man now. I know my hair was black before, I know my hair is white, and eventually there'll be no hair. So that one consciousness who is alert, who is conscious of all the changes, that is the consciousness in me. That is the eternal consciousness. And the one who knows this and claims, I am Aham Atma Asmi, I am the consciousness, Krishna said in verse 23, such a person is not reborn, does not take a further birth, attains moksha. Then, how do we attain this, what we call this level of consciousness? We have to go through different levels of sadhana, which he explained in verse 24. Various sadhanas consisting of karma yoga, upasana yoga, dhyana yoga, jnana yoga, all the various sadhanas we have to go through, and ultimately we must come to what? Jnana yoga, and accept that I am this consciousness. So the ultimate stage is of course jnana yoga. Then he says, what is the benefit of attaining this knowledge? Which he gave us the first benefit of attaining this knowledge in verse number 27. What is the first benefit in verse number 27? To see the sarvatra samadarshana. To see that oneness in creation. Even though my senses recognize that there is plurality in creation, I see different forms, shapes, colors. Through my senses, I see plurality. But from my point of my intellect, from the point of my wisdom, I see actually behind all the plurality there is only one single element called Atma. So that is the first benefit of this knowledge, to see Samadarshanam, to have equal vision. There is one singularity behind all the plurality. That was given in verse 27. The second benefit was given in verse 28 when he says that second benefit of attaining this knowledge is what we call Amritam. Param Gati means you will reach the supreme goal, which means what? Moksha. So the benefit of attaining this knowledge and claiming yourself as the Atma, you will ultimately attain moksha. That is the second benefit of this knowledge in verse 28. Third benefit of this knowledge is what? In verse 29, third benefit is? What is the third benefit of attaining this knowledge? I am the witness. I am not the doer. I am not the doer. Akrita, akarta. I am the akarta. I am not the doer. Who is the doer then? The doer is Prakriti. Prakriti is doing all the actions. Body is Prakriti. Mind is Prakriti. I am not the body. I am not the mind. And why is Prakriti acting? Because of the three gunas. The three gunas cause the variety of actions in my body, in my mind, in my intellect. And I am that which enlivens the organs, I enliven the body, I enliven the mind, but I am not the body, I am not the mind. I am the witness, Sakshi, I am the enlivening principle. So that is the third benefit. And once I realize that I am not the doer, what is the bigger benefit? That I am the non-doer, I am the akartara. What is the biggest benefit? Ego is not there, yes, but what is the biggest benefit? You act without attachment. What is the benefit? There is no karma phalam. You don't incur any punyam and papam. So once you consider yourself as a non-doer, there is no punyam, there is no papam. So that is the third phalam. And now in verse number 30, we are going to see the fourth phalam, or the result of attaining this knowledge. Now, we can actually practice this ourselves if we can shift our consciousness in our daily transactions. If we can practice this and consider ourselves as the Atma and not the body, you yourself can experience how your mind is calm and composed. Example, if somebody insults you, what do you think straight away? If you are able to shift, who is he insulting? The body. Who are you? I am not the body, I am the Atma. If mentally we can quickly shift our level of consciousness and operate from that level of Atma, we will not get at all affected. Because we identify with this body, the minute somebody calls you a donkey or a monkey, what happens? Immediately you get affected. Why? Because of your identification with the body. So something like this we can practice. Very consciously we can bring this thought into our mind. The attitude that I am the consciousness, I am not the body. So the minute somebody praises you also, you do not get ego, you do not get pride. Because why? I am not the body. Who did the work? Who did the seva? Who sang the beautiful bhajan? Who did the danam, the charity? Not the Atma. Atma cannot sing bhajan. Atma cannot do danam. Atma cannot do seva, because Atma is the witness. So the minute we get praise, aham Atma asmi, there is no pride, there is no ego. The minute we get criticized, aham Atma asmi, there is no reason for me to get disturbed. So this is something we can bring into our own practice daily. And little by little we can see, we can experience that calmness, the happiness of the mind, the serenity of the mind. So now, what is the fourth phalam? The fourth result of attaining this knowledge in verse number 30, he says it is when we recognize that we are the consciousness, we are the very nature of Brahman, we shift away from body identification to identification with the consciousness, there is a total change in our vision. Not physical, what we call physical vision, but inner vision. So what is the inner vision? And here Vedanta gives us a beautiful example to understand the difference when we are in a dream state. When we are in the dream state, what happens? We forget our waking state. We forget who we are in reality and we create a false identity for ourselves. We may be a king, we may be a millionaire, whatever it is, we create a very false identity, that which we are not. So we play a different role in the dream state. But in the dream state, for a dreamer, the dream is very, very real. How does a dreamer know that the dream state is real? Only when he or she wakes up. So Vedanta is saying the same thing here. You have forgotten your real identity. You are right now in a dream state. And thus you are involved in all the transactions and you get carried away in the ups and downs of the transactions. Whereas, who is for us to wake up from the dream state, we ourselves have to wake up. But who is going to wake us up from the ignorance of our real self? That's why we need the help of the scriptures, we need the help of the guru to wake us up from this identification. So here, in verse 30, he says, yada means when a person, this jnani, anupashyati, so anupashyati is in the second line you see, pashyati means just to see, but we understand we cannot see the consciousness. So the word anupashyati means to understand how, just like if I see a fan which is manifest, which my senses can experience, but I know that the fan cannot move on its own, so what is it that makes me realize the fan cannot move on its own? It's the knowledge. So anupashyati means by the teachings of the scriptures, by the words of the guru, I come to understand, deliberate through my sravanam, through my mananam, I come to discover this fact that there is only one consciousness there. And once I discover this fact through my deliberation, through my contemplation, through my listening, I come to accept this fact, one of the fourth benefit is what? Such a person perceives what? Bhavam. Bhavam means the existence. Existence of what? Bhavam, you see the word, where is that? In the first line, Bhuta Pratak Bhavam. So Bhavam means existence of what? Pratak. Pratak means, what you call, variety or distinct. I see all kinds of distinct creations. I see different shines, different shapes, different colors, different types of people. So I see the existence of all the difference, all the plurality, but what do I actually see? In the Bhuta. Bhuta means all the things in creation, the distinct things in creation. What do I see? In the second line, Ekastam. That means I see the whole plurality actually comes from that one, what we call singularity. Just like a goldsmith, he sees a ring, a gold ring, gold necklace, gold bracelet, so many varieties of gold he sees in different shapes and sizes, but the goldsmith knows what? Everything is nothing but all has come from that one gold. Although I see a variety, but I understand that all the ornaments have come from that one gold. In that same way, a jnani has awoken to this knowledge, sees diversity in creation, but understand that all this diversity has come from that one source, that one creator. Just like all the waves come from one ocean, just like all the trees have come from one seed, just like all the ornaments have come from one gold, I also understand the whole creation has come from that one singularity, ekastam. So, when we say ekastam, what does it mean? This means that everything is resting in that one, what we call divinity. So, we know that divinity plays three roles in this creation. Divinity is the creator, divinity is the preserver, divinity is also, when everything is destroyed, it goes back to that one source. So just like clay is the cause of pots, we call in Upanishads, that is called what we call Srishti Karanam. Srishti means the very cause. So just like clay is the Srishti Karanam for all pots, Bhagwan is the cause for all the creation. And not only is the clay is the cause of the pot, but because of the existence of clay, pots can exist. If there was no clay, there would be no pots. If there was no creator, there would be no creation. So that is called Stiti Karanam. Stiti means one who preserves. So Srishti is creation, Stiti is what we call preservation. And finally, when all the pots are broken, they all go back and become what?
Clay.
So they have come from clay, they are sustained by clay, and upon dissolution they go back to clay. That is the relationship between the creator and the creation. So I don't know, recently we all saw one very nice short story which was posted on our one WhatsApp group. I don't know whether how many of you saw that. It's a true story. It actually took place in a train, when there was a person sitting down in the train and reading the Bible, and there was a scientist sitting in the same compartment with this person, and he was a scientist, the other person. So he asked this guy reading the Bible, why are you wasting your time in all this, you know, God created and all this, and then did the heavens and hell. Science can beautifully explain to you how by the Big Bang the whole world came about. So why are you talking about this creator and all this? There's no such thing. Everything can be very scientifically explained how everything came about. So when they got down from the train, the scientist asked this fellow reading the Bible, actually, who are you? Why, what are you? You know, who are you? So he says, I am Thomas Edison. You all know who is Thomas Edison, right? He invented so many, made many, many creations he created. So he says, so you also actually are a creator. And yet it's very funny that you believe that there is one unknown creator, unseen creator sitting here, and he could have created this whole world. It is like, why are you believing in all this? So that Thomas Edison said, never mind, you come to my house, we will discuss further. So next day, how many of you heard this story?
No.
This story. It's a very old story. So the next day, and it's a true story, the scientist went to visit Thomas Edison in his house, he had a laboratory also. And when the scientist came there, he saw a beautiful, what we call a replica of the entire solar system. So he saw it was so beautifully done, all the planets, the stars, the sun, the moon, everything so beautifully created. So he asked Edison, who created this whole thing? Thomas Edison said, I don't know, I got up in the morning, suddenly I saw it was there. So this fellow thought maybe he's playing a joke on him. He says, sir, why are you playing a joke on me? I am asking you a serious question. This is such a beautiful creation. So who did this? I want to know. He said, no, it's just like that. I got up in the morning and suddenly it was there. I said, how is it possible something can just come like that? He says, in the same way that you don't believe that this entire creation can come out of nothing, there was a person who created all this beautiful model. In the same way, there is a creator. Something cannot just suddenly come out from nowhere. Like everything is so perfect, the human form, the fish, the bird, the animal, everything is so perfect, it cannot just simply come like that. There has got to be an intelligent creator. So this is what he was trying to prove to the scientists. that you cannot just simply say out of something like that, just like that something came about. No, the whole creation is so intelligently created. Everything species has got its own color, its vibrancy, its form, its function. So there has got to be a intelligent creator. So in the same way, this person, Ekastam, sees that oneness in the diversity. Where there is Prithak, Prithak means where there is diversity, this person only sees Ekastam. And thus he says, Vistaram. Vistaram means the various manifestations have also come from this one creation. Just like the variety of pots have come from one clay, the Vistaram, the variety of manifestations have also come from this one source or one creation. And he says, thus, now when you say that the whole creation exists because of this one creator, has come from this one creator, therefore what does it tell about our own self, our body, our mind? Has also come from this one creation. So therefore he says, Brahma Sampadyate. Sampadyate means this person identifies with that creator. Brahma, the creator, here means Brahman actually, meaning the unmanifest creator. Sampadyate, knowing that the whole creation, including myself, has come from this one source and it is existing because of this one source, I identify with that one source. So, identification with that oneness. So, this is the fourth benefit of this knowledge. You don't identify with plurality, you identify with that one universal singleness. That is the fourth benefit of this knowledge. So, we come to verse 31 now. Now, therefore, what this verse tells us that how to get out of this cycle of birth and death. The problem of this cycle of birth and death is caused by what? Ignorance of ourself. Because of ignorance of ourself leads to what? When we don't identify with the weakness, with the consciousness, then who do we identify with? With the body. So we identify with the body. Identification with the body is called ahamkar. Ahamkar is nothing but identifying that I am this body. Once you identify with this body, that is called ahamkar. So when there is ahamkar, we get entangled in the, what we call in our daily transactions. When we get entangled in our daily transactions, we also incur the papam and punyam also. So like I said earlier, we can put this into practice. If somebody praises you, what should be your identification? Who is he praising? He is praising the body. I am not the body. I am the consciousness. So I don't feel proud. There is no pride in me. Same time that same person insults you, who is insulting? He is insulting the body. I am not the body. I am the consciousness. When we have this capacity to switch, we find that our mind becomes serene. Our mind becomes calm. The minute we identify with the body, we get praised, we get insulted, our mind gets disturbed. So ahamkar is the biggest problem that we all face. Identification with this body. But for the jnani, there is a total change in attitude. And what is this change in attitude? Krishna says in verse 31, may you be aware that in essence you are what? I am Paramatma. You are that Supreme Self. You are part and parcel of that Supreme Self. You are not this body-mind consciousness, body-mind complex. So you are that I am Paramatma. And when you say Paramatma means what is this Supreme Self? So he uses the word avyaya. Avyaya means immutable, non-changeable, not subject to modification, which is totally opposite from this body. The body goes through modification, the mind goes through modification, but the consciousness remains immutable. Avyaya. And what is this consciousness he's identifying here? It is Look at the first line, anadityat. Anadityat means it has no beginning. There is no origin at all. That means what? You don't have a birthday. You shouldn't be celebrating your birthday. Who has the birthday? The body has the birthday. The consciousness is without beginning, actually has no date of birth. And when you do not have a date of birth, it means you do not have a date of death. There is no birth, there is no death for the consciousness. The other quality he gives here is that it is nirgunatvat. In the first line, nirgunatvat. Not only does it not have a date of birth and a date of death, but it has no attributes. Nirgunatvat means it is beyond attributes. There is no height, there is no weight, there is no shape, there is no color at all for this Atma. It is beyond attributes at all. So now, we know that the consciousness exists within this body, within this mind. Now, what happens when the body goes through changes, when the mind goes through changes? So, what happens to the consciousness which is within this body? Krishna says, sarirashto api, even though this consciousness exists in the sarira, in this body, in this mind, in this body, na lipyate, it is not at all affected. It does not get contaminated. Whatever happens to the body, any sickness, any disease, the water coming in? No. Whatever happens to the mind, it goes through periods of calmness, it goes through periods of disturbance, like now we are getting disturbance from outside. So don't think of yourself as the body, think yourself as the consciousness. So, na lipyate, it does not get affected. And what else? Not only through the daily experiences we don't get affected, but all the karmas also don't affect us. There is no sanchita karma for the Atma, there is no prarabdha karma for the Atma, there is no agami karma. I hope you already know by now the difference of the three karmas. We have discussed this many times. So, all these three karmas also do not affect the Atma. So that's what he means by na lipyate. And on top of that, na karoti. Na karoti means the Atma is never the doer. It is the akarta. It is the witness. It is the observer of all actions, the sakshi. So this is what the verse is saying. Jagrata. May you awake to that. May you awake to your own reality. The problem is now you are in a dream state. You need to be woken up. And the only thing that can wake you up is this knowledge. This awareness that you are not this body. The sooner you come to accept it, the sooner you experience calmness of mind, tranquility of mind. So that is what Krishna is saying here. Understand you are not the doer and you are not affected by whatever is happening to this body, to this mind. So, what are the four stages we discussed earlier? One goes through. First we say, I am this body. I don't even accept there's something called Atma. Then I say what? I am the body which has Atma. I accept, okay, there is something called consciousness. I accept there is something called Atma. But I don't accept that I am the Atma. I accept that I am the body which has consciousness. Then with knowledge, I come to the third stage. I say what? I am the consciousness which has the temporary body. So that should be our realization with knowledge. I am the consciousness which has this temporary body. What is the purpose of this body? Burn our karmas and to reach the state of enlightenment, to be free of this entrapment of the body, which is going to be explained to us in the next chapter 14. When Krishna talks about the gunas have got two meanings. One, guna means attributes, meaning like shape, size, color. The other meaning of guna is ropes. So the three gunas, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, are the ropes that bind the soul to the body. So how to cut these three ropes will be explained in the next chapter. So that is the third stage. I am the consciousness which has this temporary body. And what is the fourth stage? I am the same consciousness that is all pervading. So to explain this fourth stage, I am the consciousness which is all pervading, in verse number 32, Krishna uses the example of space, which is what the Upanishads generally use two examples to help us understand this Atma. One is Atma is like space. Number two, Atma is like light, prakasha, like light. So first example 32, to compare the quality of space and Atman. And why space is used? Because space has got many, many similarities with Atman. If we understand the nature of space, we can understand the nature of Atman. What are the similarities? So there are many similarities. Some of them are, one is Ekatvam. Ekatvam means there is only one space. You cannot divide space. In reality, there is only one space. Similarly, the Atma is only one. There is no different Atma in your body. You have a different Atma and I have a different Atma. It is only one Atma. It is only the covering of the body that separates the Atma. Just like the wall separates the one space, but in reality we know the outside space is the same as the inside space. So, Ekatvam. Second quality that is similar to Atma and space is Sarvagata. Sarvagata means it is all pervading. Everywhere there is this Atma, everywhere there is this space. So same qualities. Third, if something is all pervading, what will be the third quality?
Cannot be divided,
yes, but what else? What is the third quality? It cannot move. Achalam. It is not subject to movement. Like you cannot take outside space and bring inside, take inside space and bring outside. Why? Because it is everywhere. Something that is everywhere cannot move from one place to another. Achalam. So what moves during travel? We say the Atma has left the body. It is actually the subtle body that is what we call the Sukshma Sharira, the mind and the intellect and the Karana Sharira that is moving. But the Atma actually is all pervading, it cannot move. So this movement of the Sukshma Sharira and the Karana Sharira is what leaves the body and goes to occupy another body which is called Stula Sharira, cross body. So that we must be very clear about. Although we say very commonly, you know, Atma has left the body. Actually, that's not the truth. Next quality is Nirvikaraha. Both space and Atma are not subject to modification. So, just like space... Feeling the water? No. You want to shift? Maybe he doesn't know you're here. Open. Just tap the window.
No, this one is open. Yeah, it's open.
Yeah.
So
this
is open.
Yeah.
So this
one
is open.
Okay, Nirvikaraha, that is, both are not subject to modification. So what do we mean? If there is a foul smell here, space does not get contaminated. If there is a perfume smell here, space does not get contaminated with the perfume. Similarly, whatever happens to the body, the Atma is Nirvikaraha, it is not subject to modification. Whether you grow tall or short, whether you are thin or fat, the Atma remains one and the same. And one quality we discussed just now is Akhandatvam. Akhandatvam means you cannot divide space, you cannot also divide Atman. It is beyond division, indivisible. Next quality, asangatvam. Asangatvam means detached. Now, detached means what? Detached means whatever happens again to the space, it never gets affected. So everything happens in space. All kinds of transactions happen in space, but space is never affected at all. Okay? Whatever good qualities of the area, bad qualities never affects space. And the final quality is what we call, it accommodates everything. Everything is supported in space. So Atma also, everything is supported by Atma. So once we understand the similarities between space and Atma, then we can also understand the very qualities of Atma. So here in verse number 32, Krishna is using space to compare. He says yatha. Yatha means just as. So look at the second line there. Akasham. Akasham is what? Space. So just like space, is the two qualities are given there. The first one is given in the first line. Sarvagatam. Sarvagatam we just mentioned just now means what? All-pervading. So just like space is all-pervading, first quality. Second, it is also na upalipyate. The second line you see the word na upalipyate means it is not tainted. So the two qualities of space. One, it is all-pervading. Second, it is not tainted. So just like space is all-pervading and it is not tainted. And why is it that it is all-pervading and not tainted? He gives the reason. Look at the first line, Songshmir. Songshmir means because it is subtle. It is very, very subtle. Space is not gross, it is very subtle. So just like that, Atma also is very subtle. And because of that, it is not at all. It is all pervading, it can go everywhere, and it is also not at all affected. So when we say subtle, what is your understanding of subtle? Cannot be perceived by the senses. That is what we mean by subtle. Space cannot be perceived by the senses. Atma also cannot be perceived by the senses. That's why it is called subtle. So he says, in that same way, tatha. So you see the word yatha and tatha. Tatha is in the last line, yatha is in the first line. Yatha means just as space. Tatha, so is the Atman also. The Atman is also what? It is also sarvatra. So sarvatra is in the third line. Atma is also sarvatra. And it is also na palipyate. In the last line you see that. Second line you see na palipyate. Last line you see na palipyate. Just like space is not affected, Atman is also not affected. And where is this Atman? He says avashtita. Avashtita means it exists. Where does it exist? Dehe, in this body. The very Atman exists in this body. It is also all-pervading. It is in the body. It is also outside the body. It is in everything in creation. And at the same time, it is not affected by the creation. It does not have any attributes at all. So, physical body changes, hair changes, skin gets wrinkled, mind goes through different emotions, but Atma remains changeless. It is not at all affected. So now, another question can be asked also. If Akash, space and Atma are one and the same in all aspects, why can't you say that space also is in Atma? Or why can't you say that space is Atma? If you are comparing and saying space has got all these qualities of Atma, why can't we just say space is Atma? You see the question, not? So if I have given you all the qualities of space and I say space is exactly like Atma, then why say Atma? Why not just say space is Atma?
Because
Exactly. So, which means what? It is also subject to change also. Right? So, unlike Atma, so space is what we call as Achetana. It is, has got no life of its own. The difference with space and Atma is, space is Achetana. It has got no consciousness. Whereas Atma has got all the qualities of space, but one extra quality it has is, it is Chetana, it is consciousness. So never mistake, whenever comparison is done between space and Atma, then we say, why talk about Atma, just say space is Atma. Why? Because space has got no consciousness. It is one part of the five elements. It is like matter, it has got no life of its own. Whereas Atma has got a life of its own, it is conscious. So now the second example that Krishna gives us in verse 33, one was space in verse 32, in verse 33 he gives an example of prakasha or light to know the Atman. And if we look at again the similarities between light and Atma, also there are many similarities. Same as what we talked about space, space is one, light also like sun. We compare to sun, actually here they are talking about sun. Sun is also only one. So just like space is one, sun is one, Atma also is one, also ekam. Second, sunlight also is all pervading. It shines everywhere. Just like space, sunlight also is all pervading. Third, sunlight does not get tainted. If sun shines on pure water, it remains pure. If the same sun shines on dirty water, the sun does not get tainted, it is the water that is tainted. So you can see the similar qualities also. Third, sunlight illumines every object in creation. So whether the object is moving or not moving, sunlight will illumine. But sun itself does not move. So just like space does not move, the sun itself does not move, although it illumines everything in creation. And finally, the last quality is sunlight is indivisible. It cannot be cut into pieces. Similarly, Atma also is indivisible. So here again, Krishna uses the comparison. He says, yatha, just as ekaha. Ekaha means the sun is only one. And how does he use the word for the word for sun? If you look at the second line, the word is Ravi. Ravi means sun. So just like the sun is only one, okay, and not only is it one, but it prakashayati. Prakashayati means it illumines. What does it illumine? Imam Krishnam Lokam, three words there. Imam, this. Krishnam, whole. Lokam means what? World. That one sun illumines the entire world. So he says, just like that one sun illumines the whole world. Tatha, in the third line again you see the word tatha, and this is the way the Upanishads explain, yatha, tatha, just like this, understand what you can experience, what is manifest, by that way you can understand what is unmanifest. So from the known to the unknown. So just like the sun, what we call, illumines the entire universe, tatha, in the same way. Now, here he goes back to the very title of this chapter. So he uses the word Kshetri and Kshetram. So what is Kshetri? Kshetri is the knower. The knower meaning the absolute consciousness. Brahman or God or Ishvara or whatever, or Atma, is all one and the same. So just like the sun illumines the entire creation, tatha, in the same way, Kshetri, this one universal consciousness, prakashayati, it also illumines what? Krishnam Kshetram. So what is Kshetram now? Kshetra means the entire creation made of matter. So just like that one sun illumines the whole world, this consciousness also, when we say illumine means what now? This one consciousness illumine means what? Gives life or enlivens the entire universe. The sun shines only, but this one consciousness enlivens the entire universe. So it is by what? By proximity. Just like if we have a piece of metal, metal cannot get hot, right? But if you put a flame near the metal, what happens to the metal? It automatically becomes hot. So this body is made of matter, it has no life. But because of the proximity of the consciousness, it enlivens our body, it enlivens our mind. So that's what he's saying here, that it illumines the entire kshetram, the entire field. Field here meaning the whole creation, which is made of matter. So what Krishna wants us to understand, that illumining factor that you are. You are not this matter, you are the consciousness that illumines everything. Just like the sun. And now in the final verse here, Krishna will conclude the teachings of Kshetra and Kshetrajna by giving us the final benefit of having this knowledge. And the final benefit is moksha. So only this knowledge to understand and discriminate between matter and consciousness will bring us to the state of moksha. So Krishna says here, the wise person is one who knows the difference between matter and consciousness, and having known the difference between matter and consciousness, claims what? I am the consciousness. I am not matter. And whatever I am experiencing, whatever you are experiencing, the changes in this body, the changes in the mind, the changes in your interactions, you are the witness. You are the observer. You are not part and parcel of the changes. So the world is matter, body is matter. What about thoughts? Why matter? Continuously changing. Thoughts are also matter. Intellect is what? Also matter, because your knowledge also keeps on changing. Everything that you are experiencing is matter. Who are you? I am the one who is experiencing all these changes. So here Krishna says, ye meaning those who have vidur means those who have acquired this knowledge, those who have understood the difference, antaram. So antaram means the distinction. So ye vidur antaram, those who have attained this knowledge, antaram, what knowledge? The distinction between what? Kshetra, Kshetrajna, between the field, which is matter, Kshetrajna, the consciousness, who have understood, who are clearly able to discriminate between Kshetra and Kshetrajna, between Purusha and Prakriti, between matter and consciousness. How? Because we cannot visibly see consciousness. So how? So the very important word there, Jnana Chakshu. Chakshu means eye. Jnana means knowledge, by the eye of wisdom, meaning not this physical gross eye, but by your intellectual understanding. Just like, as I say, we see the fan, it is moving because of the unseen electricity, but by our wisdom we understand the fan is moving by this unseen force. In the same way we can understand this whole body is functioning. I am able to speak, I am able to see, because of the presence of this consciousness in me. So ye vidur antaram kshetra kshetrajna, who can understand the difference between these two. How? By jnana chakshu. And this jnana chakshu, symbolically, where is it located? Yeah, symbolically, where is it located? Where is the location of this eye? The third eye, which is generally the space between the two eyebrows. That's why we put the, what we call this the third eye, the Agnya Chakra. That's where the consciousness is Agnya Chakra. So the third eye, and that's where also you put the vibhuti, right? Or the tilak, we put there, the third eye, meaning to signify that a third eye has opened. Okay? The eye of wisdom. So why is this called the eye of wisdom? This eye of wisdom, why is it called the third eye? Why is it called the third eye? We already have two eyes, but we call this the third eye. Why do you call this the third eye? So the two physical eyes can only see what is manifest, but the third eye can only understand what is unmanifest. Right? So two physical eyes are only for you to appreciate or experience the manifest, but only the when your third eye is open can you experience the unmanifest, the unknown. Okay? So one who is able to distinguish between these two, what is the ultimate result? So the ultimate result is that we have to understand, therefore we see vibrancy in the world, we see activity in the world, but we understand that world is made of matter. It is not vibrant, it is not active because of itself, but because of the presence of consciousness. So he says, one who understands Bhuta Prakriti. Bhuta Prakriti means the whole creation here, Bhuta Prakriti, meaning the five elements. Bhuta is five elements. Prakriti means the cause or what happens when the five elements transform. This body is made of ether, air, fire, water, earth. The five elements are Bhuta. They transform into this body which is Prakriti. So Bhuta Prakriti means the whole creation which has come from the five elements. Okay, it does not have is what we call what is the word to use? It does not have natural existence. This world does not have natural existence. It has what? Borrowed existence. Just like the water boils. Why? Water by itself does not have heat, but it can boil when you put a fire. The fire transfers the heat to the water, and the water appears to boil, not because of the properties of water, but what? Because of the properties of fire that have been transferred to the water. In the similar way, this Bhuta Prakriti is made of Bhuta, five elements. Elements are all inert, they have no life. But why the whole existence can function is because of the unseen, what we call Chetraknya or consciousness. And one who understands all this, he says, Yanti Te Param. Yanti means will attain Te Param, the highest, the what we call moksha or freedom from the cycle of birth and death. So they reach Param means they reach the state of moksha. And we understand this state of moksha goes through two levels. One is we can attain this state of moksha while living, or rather we should attain this while living, which is called what? Jivan Mukta. This Jivan means living, Mukta means freedom while living. So we have to attain this knowledge not after death, but while we are living we have to attain this knowledge that I am the consciousness. Only when we attain this knowledge while we are living and we operate from this level, from the level of consciousness, then only we can attain what is called what? Videha Mukta, that we don't have to come back for another birth. Deha means body, Videha means devoid of a body. So first Jivan Mukta, attain this knowledge, be free while living, and while you operate from this level of consciousness, then you will attain Videha Mukti upon death. So here in this chapter, Krishna has explained the differences between consciousness and matter. Then he has also told us what are the qualities which we have to attain, the 20 qualities you remember, in order to attain this knowledge. And finally he has also told us what is the benefit of attaining this knowledge. So all that has been explained in chapter 3. Okay? So, any questions upon on this chapter or any other chapter? Significance actually to say that my third eye is open basically. So when we put the vibhuti, the significance, number one for the location of the third eye, number two to signify that we are what we call our whole effort, our whole spiritual sadhana is basically to open the third eye. So until we don't understand the existence of the Atma within us, until we don't accept that we are the Atma, our third eye will always remain closed. So the whole purpose of spirituality is to ultimately open this third eye. And we have to do it by going through karma yoga first, upasana yoga then, and finally through jnana yoga. That's why it's called jnana chakshu. The eye can only be opened through wisdom. Not through rituals, not through prayers, not through dhanam, not through seva, but it can only be opened through wisdom, jnana chakshu, knowledge. So that is what is in this section. Yeah.
I'm not very sure of this. When you say we want to get knowledge, we should go to Yosadana, Kanda Yoga, Yosadana, Sadhana, and Maharajitya. Can Sravanam Yoga sit still and go through for a period of time?
Sorry, Sravanam Yoga? Ah, okay, right, right. You see, the definition of the real guru, you see, example, you go to a school, how many gurus are there? Many gurus. How many guru vasa are there? Only one. So there are many gurus in this world. But what we are talking about here is a guru vasa. We have to look for that guru vasa. So the gurus are only there to, spur your interest in that knowledge, to set you going in one direction. But ultimately we have to come to that main guru. So like, for example, there are many gurus, spiritual people, who just go about giving talks. But ultimately we have to surrender to that guru. And who is that guru? The guru must have two qualities. We are talking about that ultimate guru. In the Upanishads, it is described as Jnana Nishta and Srotriya. Srotriya means that guru himself should have gone through all the scriptures, must be a master of all the scriptures, not just one or two scriptures. Thorough understanding of the Vedas, thorough understanding of Upanishads, Puranas, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutra, all thorough understanding, number one. Number two, must be a realized soul. Jnana Nishta, one is Jnana Nishta, one is the other, must be a realized soul. That means he or she must have already, reached the state of moksha while living. Now, of course, the next question you'll ask me is, how do I know who's that person? So, the problem is, we ourselves have limited knowledge. How am I to know whether the guru has total knowledge, right? Number one. Number two, I have not reached moksha. How can I know whether my guru has reached the state of sthita prajna or jivan mukta? So that means I can never know. The only thing I can do is go to the guru, or because of our effort, because of our genuine effort, our sincerity, what does Krishna say in the Gita chapter 10 verse 10? The guru will be provided. So what we have to do, we put in sincere effort. We put in honest, dedicated, sincere effort. Ultimately, if not in this lifetime, in that lifetime, that right guru will come into our life. So to us to attain, now what about those who attain the wrong guru? It is also due to your own karma, you attain the wrong guru also. When sincerity is not there sometime, or you are only seeking more worldly benefits, you are actually not interested in knowledge. Many people surrender to gurus, but what do they ask for? They ask back again for same old worldly benefits, material benefits. They don't seek that higher knowledge. But if you are sincere seeking that knowledge, then you will ultimately meet that guru who will impart that knowledge to you. So what we can do, we put in effort. The rest we have to surrender to the Lord, that ultimately we will get the grace of this guru. If not in this lifetime, maybe next lifetime. The other gurus are basically just, as I say, gurus in a school. They are all just imparting some knowledge, but they are not the guru that you are searching for. Any more questions?
Some people say through meditation you can open up.
Okay. So there are some texts that say, okay, only through bhakti you can reach God. Some say, no, just do seva, 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 you can reach God. Some say, no, you must only through meditation you can reach God. So why, if you open so many texts, there are so many different ways. If you take the Narad Bhakti Sutras, they stress only on bhakti, 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 bhakti. They don't talk about meditation, they don't talk about knowledge. You come to Upanishads, they say, forget everything, just come to knowledge. Then you talk about others where they say only meditation. Now, why are there so many contradicting parts? The reason being is because we all are at different levels. So, depending on the level we are, if we are at a very progressive level, we've already gone through several births, we've gone through karma, we've gone through seva, all that we've gone through. We've also got the knowledge, jnanam. Ultimately, we come to meditation. The ultimate is meditation. But if I have not gone through karma, if I still have many impurities in my mind, jealousy, pride, anger, greed, ego, then I try to sit for meditation. It becomes what? Instead of meditation, it becomes maditation, M-E-D. You only can go mad. Because why? Mind is not prepared. So when that part of the scripture says, only through meditation you can reach God, we must understand it is prescribed for which level of devotee. Or if that scripture says only through bhakti you can reach God, it doesn't mean through bhakti you get moksha, but through bhakti you will come then to knowledge, from knowledge you will come to meditation, from meditation you will realize yourself. So just like the Gita, that's why you see the first six chapters, they start with karma, chapter 3, then they come to knowledge, chapter 4 and 5, then only in chapter 6 he talks about meditation. So there is a progressive evaluation or the progressive step for us to come there. So when we read that, we must not take that out of context. We must understand when they say meditation comes to God, it means for the very ultimate level of devotees who have gone through all the other sadhana. Okay? Moksha, yes, yes, yeah. Because just now we recited the Gita Dhyanam prayer. You see that verse there in the Gita Dhyanam prayer, verse number 6. This is the glory of the Gita in the Gita Dhyanam prayer. So in verse number 6, he says, he compares all the Upanishads to cows. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo. Gavo means cows. Sarva, all. All Upanishads are like cows. What are Upanishads? What type of scriptures are there? What do the Upanishads deal with? See. Yeah, so what do you mean by cream of the Vedas? You see, the Vedas themselves are divided into two sections. There is the Karma Kanda, which explains to you all your duties, your responsibilities, prayers, rituals. Whatever you want to attain in the worldly life is explained in the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas. So the Vedas contain 100,000 verses. Out of 100,000 verses, 80,000 verses deal with Karma Kanda. All kinds of worldly benefits you can get by doing this ritual, by doing this prayer, by chanting this mantra. By doing your duties and responsibilities, it tells you all the worldly benefits you can get, karma kanda portion of the Vedas, 80,000 verses. The balance 20,000 verses are divided into two sections. 16,000 verses deal with upasana kanda. Upasana kanda is meditation upon a god with form or a god, formless god also, upasana, chanting mantras, etc. Okay. Final 4,000 verses deal with jnana kanda. This jnana kanda portion of the Vedas is called Upanishads. The other name for Upanishads is the jnana kanda portion of the Vedas. What does jnana kanda deal with? They don't talk about rituals, they don't talk about prayers, dhanam, nothing at all. They only talk about one thing, which is what? Atma jnana. Knowledge of the self. So this jnana kanda portion is known as the cream of the Upanishads. It is also called Vedanta. Veda anta means it comes at the end portion of the Vedas. Why? Why does it come at the end portion of the Vedas? That's why it's called Upanishad, it's called Vedanta, it's called Jnana Kanda, same thing. Why at the end tail portion of the Vedas? Because that's why the scriptures say, they don't say start straight away knowledge. I have so many desires, I have so many impurities in my mind. If I jump straight away into knowledge, I won't be able to grasp it. So Vedas say, okay, go through karma kanda, go through family life, satisfy all your desires. When you come to the tail end of your life, then you come to knowledge. So that's why the jnana kanda, the Upanishads or the Vedanta is always advised to come to the end. Now end doesn't mean that when you are 80 years old on your deathbed, then you come to jnana kanda. What it means basically, first finish up all your duties and responsibilities, then quickly come to jnana kanda. You may not be able to do it in this life, does not mean you cannot do it in the next life also. So when we call Gita, all the cows are like Upanishads. Upanishads are the knowledge part of the Vedas. Gita is the Sarva Upanishado Gavo, Dugda Gopal and Nandana. Gopal meaning, the word Gopal is very interesting. Go means cow, Pal means one who is the protector of the cows. So Krishna is the protector of the cow, means Krishna is the protector of the Upanishads. Just like the milk, the one who takes care of the cows, he extracts the milk from the cows, which is the essence of the cows, which nourishes us. Same way Krishna has extracted the essence of the Upanishads. And in this dialogue between him and Arjuna, he has extracted the essence of the Upanishads and given to us in this dialogue of Bhagavad Gita. So the 108 Upanishads, they are said to be actually 1108 Upanishads originally, but many Upanishads have been lost. So now we only have 108 Upanishads. And where do we find this list of 108 Upanishads? In one of the Upanishads called Muktiko Upanishad. Muktiko Upanishad is a dialogue between Lord Rama and Hanuman. And in that dialogue, Lord Rama gives the list of all the 108 Upanishads. But if you want to go and study the 108 Upanishads, you are most welcome to. But if you think that you want the essence of the Upanishads, then study the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Upanishads. Upanishads deal with only one topic called Atma Jnana, knowledge of the self. And this is the very purpose of the Gita. It is also bringing our attention to that knowledge. That's why in Bhagavad Gita also, the knowledge part of the Gita is also at the end also, in chapters 13 to 18. Chapters 1 to 6 deal with karma, 7 to 12 deal with upasana, chapters 13 to 18 deal with jnana. So they are divided accordingly to the Vedas. The Gita is a condensation of the Vedas. How the Vedas are partitioned, the same way the Gita also is partitioned. So it is bringing us to that. And you know, when you recite the chapter, at the end we always recite what? Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su. The Gita is Upanishad. Su Upanishad Su. Su means like we give a title, honorific title. So the Bhagavad Gita is a part of the, it is the essence of the Upanishadsu, Upanishadsu, then it is also two things. It is Brahma Vidya. What is Brahma Vidya? Knowledge of the absolute Brahma. Okay, is Brahma Vidya. It is also Yoga Shastra. Yoga Shastra means it is our duty, our responsibilities also. What are our duties and responsibilities as a human being? So it teaches us both things. Yoga Shastra, it is also a Brahma Vidya, knowledge of Brahma, the absolute. This is what the Bhagavad Gita is. So that's why in every end of every chapter you recite Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su Brahma Vidyam Yoga Shastre. How is it presented? Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, in a dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. So that is the essence of the Gita. We study the Gita, we understand the essence of the Veda. Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade. So that's what basically is. Any more questions? Okay, we have another 15 minutes. Any more questions? And then next week we will start on chapter 14. Oh, back benches all very quiet. All sitting behind all very quiet. No questions. How many of you are coming for the retreat? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of you. Okay. 5, 6. Okay. There's still another 4 more places, so those who are interested can contact Brother Kumara. December 16, 17 and 18 at Port Dixon. 17, 18. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 16, right? Right. We have, right? 4 places.
Yeah.
4 places. Okay, if no questions, we can end with a prayer then.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishna Vande Jagat.